It's Thursday, April 28, 2011. I'm Albert Moeller, and this is The Briefing, a daily analysis of news and events from a Christian worldview. The New York Times on Wednesday had a very interesting headline above the fold on page one. The headline reads like this: Atheists Seek Chaplain Role in the Military. Now, many people looking at the headline may think that they're looking at an apparent oxymoron, a compound that just doesn't go together, atheist chaplain being, in this case, the compound of two words that just makes no sense. But when you look at the story, the New York Times is reporting that there is a concerted effort underway by atheists and agnostics in the military and their sponsors and advocates beyond to include a humanist chaplaincy corps in the larger ranks of the military chaplains. Now, as you look at the story, there's of course more going on here, but as military atheist leaders told the New York Times, they claim that proselytizing by chaplains is forbidden. However, Christian beliefs pervade military culture, creating subtle pressures on non-Christians to convert. Now, we're going to look at that statement very closely. First of all, there's a shift. It begins by saying that chaplains are forbidden to proselytize. But then it goes away from the chaplains to talk about the military culture at large, where the accusation is that Christian beliefs pervade. Well, the bottom line in all of this is that we have an all-volunteer military. And in an all-volunteer military, the reality is the military is made up of, well, no surprise, those who volunteer. And there is also probably no surprise that those who volunteer include what many claim is a disproportionate percentage of those who are evangelical Christians. Now, there is a significant balancing act that's called for here in the military. We have no established church. We have a First Amendment to the U.S. Constitution that guarantees the free exercise of religion, but also forbids any establishment. The role of the military chaplain is thus inherently constitutionally unstable, yet they've been a part of the American military experience from the very beginning. George Washington had chaplains assigned to the Revolutionary Army. When you look at the current challenges, you recognize that there is a group of secularists who are trying to do their dead-level best to diminish or to marginalize the Christian influence in the armed services. Just consider the routine now investigations that seem to be launched against the military academies in general and the Air Force Academy in particular. But the reality is that the free exercise of religion means that soldiers, sailors, airmen, and all others in the U.S. military are free to speak openly of their beliefs, and when it comes to Christians, that means to seek to lead others also to a saving knowledge of Jesus Christ. Now, this is an issue that is somewhat separate from the chaplaincy corps, but this news article in the New York Times serves as a signal of the kind of secularist agenda that we now confront. And yet it also reminds us of the mission field that America is increasingly becoming, a mission field that includes a significant number of persons, indeed a growing number of persons, who identify themselves as atheists or agnostics, as skeptics or as humanists. Now, should they have a representation in the chaplaincy corps? Well, that's really hard to imagine. As even one of the atheists spoke in this article, First Lieutenant Samantha Nickel at Fort Bragg said, "You're not a faith group, you're a lack of faith group." Well, it's hard to imagine a chaplaincy being assigned that as a primary responsibility to a lack of faith group. On the other hand, stranger things have happened. And in our constitutional order, when you have a collision between this kind of principle and a secularist impulse, well, you just might end up with a chaplaincy for the humanists. You just might end up with a chaplain for the lack of faith group. That's postmodern America in these very confused times. The Wall Street Journal read an editorial in recent days by Peggy Noonan, former speechwriter for President Ronald Reagan and President George H.W. Bush. Peggy Noonan has a regular column in the weekend edition of the Wall Street Journal, and in her latest edition, she talks about what the world sees in America. She begins by saying, "I want to talk a little more this holiday week about what I suppose is a growing theme in this column, and that is an increased skepticism toward U.S. military intervention, including nation building." She says, "Our republic is not now in an historical adventure period. That's not what is needed. We are or should be in a self-strengthening one. Our focus should not be on outward involvement, but inner repair. Bad people are gunning for us, it is true. We should find them, dispatch them, and harden the target." But she goes on to say, "On the other hand, we need to strengthen the United States from within. And folks without us, absolutely no." In other words, we have become the net exporter of such things as, well, violence and pornography, especially when it comes to entertainment. The U.S. is the great creative capital of the world now. It is from the United States that there are so many avenues of entertainment products being sent out into the world. And as she points out, they do not paint a flattering picture of the United States. And many of those we say we're trying to help wonder, upon observation of our cultural products, if it's not America that needs the help. She writes something we need to notice. She says this: imagine for a moment that you are a foreign visitor to America. You're a 40-year-old businessman from Afghanistan. You teach a class at Kabul University. You are relatively sophisticated. You're in pursuit of a business deal. It's your first time here. There's an America in your mind. It was formed in your childhood by old John Ford movies and involves cowboy hats and gangsters and fedoras. You know this is no longer what applies. You're not a fool, but you're not sure what does. You land at JFK, walking past a TSA installation where they're patting the genital areas of various travelers. Americans sure have a funny way of saying hello. She talks about the fact that when he looks at American cultural artifacts, our television entertainment and beyond, he sees things that are frankly rather disgusting. She talks about the program Jersey Shore. She said, this Jersey Shore doesn't reach just the Jersey Shore. It creates the Jersey Shore. It makes America the Jersey Shore. Now, as she writes here, she has something important for us to consider. When there are people who are watching the United States and indeed praying for the United States to come and save them, when they look at our own cultural exports, they wonder aloud if it's not America that needs the saving. I think Peggy Noonan is onto something very significant here when she writes that America is not now in a period predominantly of international adventures. We ought to be in a period of strengthening from within, asking some very basic questions about the American culture and the American character. And until we do that, the rest of the world's going to scratch its heads and wonder exactly what we're going to be exporting when America speaks to the world. Speaking of the world, the terrorist threat is something that is ever among us, and there are some recent reports about the fact that Al-Qaeda has a particular interest in suspension bridges. Reporting also for the New York Times, Benjamin Weiser and Al Baker report that the terrorist group has long had a fascination with suspension bridges in general, and specifically the Brooklyn Bridge there in New York. New documents revealed that before September 11, 2001, methods for bringing down bridges were being taught at a terrorist training camp in Afghanistan. Now, this is a good news, bad news situation. The bad news is there are people, as Peggy Noonan pointed out in our last conversation piece, who really do want to hurt us. There are targets they have identified, and as she said, America has a responsibility to harden the targets. But consider how many targets we're really talking about. Consider just the number even of suspension bridges in the United States, even of major suspension bridges. But there's a particular interest in the Brooklyn Bridge, and this will not be surprised to know that American law enforcement agencies have been giving a major attention to hardening that target and making it more difficult. But there are things that are inherited in this situation, even by engineering, that create some weaknesses. Even where some cables have been exposed on the Brooklyn Bridge, bearing an inordinate weight, the cutting of which could lead to at least a catastrophe, if not the complete collapse of the bridge. We are told in this news story from the New York Times that if you cross the Brooklyn Bridge, if you look carefully, you can see all the cameras, the police cars, and the others that are keeping that bridge under constant surveillance. Well, I'm just reminded as I look to this that this is another indication of what it means to live in a Genesis 3 world. Those who built the Brooklyn Bridge built it to fight against the forces of gravity, not to fight against a terrorist attack. They developed the cables in order to provide adequate engineering, not adequate security. And when America is thinking of all the targets that need to be hardened, well, it's easy to look at the Brooklyn Bridge and its cultural and historical significance, but you have to wonder, what might a group like Al-Qaeda be looking at that's not even on our screen? We live in a dangerous world, a world of cancer, a world of termites, a world of tsunamis, and yes, a world of terrorists as well. Christians reading a story like this need to be reminded of the power of sin, of the pervasiveness of sin in a fallen world, and of the sinister kind of way that sin creates even new opportunities for sin. But we're also indeed affirmed here in our understanding of the fact that only God can rescue us from this. I'm thankful for the cameras and the police cars and all the rest, but at the end of the day, nothing, no force, no security apparatus can provide adequate security against all these uncountable threats. WikiLeaks is not only in recent activity releasing thousands and thousands of what should be classified documents related to Guantanamo and the inmates there, it is also now complaining about the fact that others are leaking its secrets. You know, the world is filled with all kinds of sinful manifestations, and hypocrisy is one of the ones that is perhaps, well, most difficult to avoid and easiest to detect. But there has to be some less than ironic cynicism when it comes to WikiLeaks complaining about others releasing its secrets ahead of itself. It's almost like thieves who are complaining that other thieves get to the bank vault ahead of them. We're living in a very strange world where headlines like this supposedly make sense. Another major poll is out, this one conducted by the New York Times and CBS News, and the headline of the poll kind of tells you where things are. It speaks of a darkening mood across America. Now, as you look to the actual data of this survey, you find that, like so many of these polls, it asks a lot of questions that may seem disconnected, but in the end provide a rather interesting perspective on the mentality and worldview, the emotional disposition and attitudinal disposition of the American people. But it also reveals something else that we as Christians need to note. If we are asked, if a pollster were to come up to any one of us and ask a question, would you prefer this or that? Would you want this or that? We would probably answer just on the basis of that question. Let me give you an actual question asked by the pollsters who took this survey. If you had to make a major cut in the U.S. budget, would you rather cut military spending or, for instance, the kind of spending reflected at Social Security and Medicare? Would you rather cut social programs or the military? Well, as this report said, 45% chose military cuts compared with those to the social services cuts. Well, you look at that and say, well, that means that 45% of Americans, at least who responded to this survey, if it is representative, want to say, let's cut the military rather than social services. Well, you know, that's a very interesting way to report this, isn't it? Because the obverse of that is that 55%, at least those other than the 45%, at least registered some other decision, such as cutting social services before the military. But, you know, if you look at the data even further, I can almost inform you and tell you ahead of time what you're going to see. You're going to see a massive confusion because these generalized questions do not actually get down to the policy decisions that have to be made. There's one of the great disjunctions in American public life. If you talk to citizens about what they want, they'll speak in the most general of terms. Do we want to eradicate the deficit? You bet. Do we want a balanced budget? You know we do. Do we want to help those in need, as we define in terms of social services? Of course we do. Do we want to have a strong military? Well, you bet we do. We have to make some cuts. Where should we cut? Well, if you speak in the same generalized terms, people will just speak in terms of their own kind of emotional and intellectual impressions. But if you are in office, whether you are in the House of Representatives or in the Senate, or if you're the President of the United States, or if you're in one of the various appointed positions that is doing the bureaucratic work and the number crunching to inform policy, the fact is that you can't deal in just those generalized terms. You have to make specific cuts. Do you cut this military program or that? Do you cut this social program or the other one? Do you judge these budgetary issues in terms of some consistent worldview? Do you try to put it together in a way that shares the cuts equally? We need to have some sympathy with the fact that in a fallen world, these decisions are never easy. And in an honest world, they require specificity, not just generality. You know, I look at this poll saying that Americans are in a darkening mood because they sense that the cuts have to come and that something has to fundamentally change. But let's just remember that this is like what happens in a family or a business or a congregation coming to these decisions. If you think it's tough in the general, just wait till you have to get to the specifics. Thanks for listening to The Briefing. For more information, go to my website at albertmohler.com. You can follow me on Twitter by going to twitter.com/Albert Mohler. For more information about the Southern Baptist Theological Seminary, go to sbts.edu. For information about Boyce College, just go to boycecollege.com. I'll meet you again tomorrow for The Briefing.